This is the August 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
The outside markets laid on the commodities in Chicago this week, and still corn managed to finish higher. We'll try to explore why and next week's USDA crop production report today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Murray Weiss of Murray Weiss Associates about the price of farmland. Our panelists in studio today include Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Dan Zwicker, this past week, the world stage was filled with a lot of ugly news from Europe and desperate thoughts of a double-dip recession here in the United States. Still, corn managed to finish the week higher. We'll talk about that, of course, in just a moment. The question at hand for you now is, how far can fear alone push the global economic market before it rebounds or breaks?
Well, that's what economics is all about, is human psychology. I mean, it's basically the market is what people think things are worth, and right at the moment, I think the market is reacting to worldwide currency devaluations because every wire you look at, somebody is devaluing their currency, so it's kind of like a race to the bottom. In that kind of atmosphere, you basically have a lot of liquidation. People are taking money off the table. They're hunting for safety. And you can kind of see what happened to the T-bond market this past week. So my guess is we've got some down risk in the stock market. But when you look at monthly charts, we're just basically in a correction. But I think when you look at your longer-term chart, people are probably still looking for King C down, and basically all we've been doing is the B wave up over since 08, 09 lows. So that's where you're going to get a lot of fear at.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
We've seen a lot of ups and downs. We've seen a lot of rapid reaction. Intraday, one in the morning, things are bad. In the afternoon, they're good. We saw on Friday how the different announcements took things way around. We saw crude oil change about $4 in one day because of things. And I think we're going to continue to see volatility. But the world is in very dire financial shapes, and we could see more down with it.
And Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Well, it was one of the biggest financial weeks, on one hand, since I've been in this business for over 38 years. It was monumental in the fact that we had such tremendous price swings in the commodities outside financial markets. It was major legislation in Washington and also the financial meltdown on Wall Street and actually having corn rally. The big thing that hit me was all these field results of this mature, short, stubby corn that's being, pictures are being taken, pushed out through the internet, and people are aware of it, and add that up to a good rainfall event that's coming in to the Midwest and the market closed higher. That's a statement.
What kind of statement?
Well, I think it's a statement for two things. Number one, we always wanted to wait to that sleepy old USDA crop production report in August before we actually woke up. But there was this FC Stone number that kind of shocked everybody. We also saw the stock market collapse, weather forecasts, and all of a sudden all these internet pictures showed up with these small stubby corn ears of corn out there, and it caught everybody's attention big time.
We'll get back to the FC Stone numbers and some of those in just a bit. But, oh, Dan, you can't whip out a King C and an Elliott and a wave down for a B. Is that an Elliott wave you're talking about?
That'd be it's an Elliott wave count. Most people kind of want to use your 08 highs as the final drive to the top, and then the correction that we had in the last half of 08 into early 09 was the A wave, and since 09 we've been working on the B wave, and somewhere in here this B wave is going to end, and then we're going to go down for King C, and that means basically we'll take out the 08 low points.
You think that'll happen?
There's a lot of things can go under the a lot of water go under the bridge, but I think a lot of my long-term cycles tell me that we're in for a pretty rough spell in the 13-14 time frame. It could come early. Things seem to want to move faster these days, but if I was going to give you a date, I would say 13 is going to be turbulent waters.
Okay, let's get back to the corn and soybeans at this point and talk about some of those numbers that came out for the week. You mentioned the FC Stone numbers. They're, at a 13 billion bushel crop at 153.2 yield. Informa was much bigger at 158 on their yield. A 13.4 crop, Allendale at, 12.9 billion bushels. They were in one of the smaller ones. What do you think your numbers ought to be?
Well, Todd, we definitely think FC Stone's on the right track, and they might be correct today, and it's going to depend on our weather from here on in. I don't know why or what is going on with them because, you know, we are looking at whether we do see that rain that Paul's calling for to come in to stabilize his crop. We talked to some very big seed corn companies, and their agronomists are saying there's a 30 to 60 bushel drag on corn, depending on its planting dates, already from what they were expecting just because of the hot evenings, not just the hot days, but the high-low temperatures.
You know, can I have you follow up on that? Because you heard that discussion, and it made a differentiation between April and May-planted corn too, right?
Yes, the April-planted corn, they were looking for a 30-bushel drag, and they were looking for a 50 to 60-bushel drag for that planted in May.
Three things here. We know that it was a horribly hot July. In our early August. We know that the corn, the ear of corn is mature. We're seeing some denning going on, and we are seeing some tremendous dry pockets in the Midwest. But the big factor here is that some of these yields are being based on normal weather from here on. Even if we have a nice half inch to 2 inch rain in central Illinois, there's still the major damage, and we don't think that the corn crop can balloon higher up close to that 158.7 bushels per acre that the government's talking about.
And of course, we'll find out more about what the government's thinking when we get to Thursday, August the 11th of next week. Crop production report is due out. Visit our website at willag.org. We'll post the numbers there. If you get there early enough and sign up for our newsletter and you give us your cell phone, we'll text those numbers to you. September corn this week, Dan Zwicker, had a high at 714 and a quarter, a low at 665 and a quarter. Settlement price by the time Friday rolled around week over week was 27.5 cents higher at $6.93. New crop December at 703 was up 34 and a quarter cents from the previous week. Paul Cooley was impressed with the action on Friday and for the week. Were you too?
Yeah, technical action is constructive on the corn market. We were forming a descending triangle formation over the past week and a half or so. Tuesday, it decided to take a breakout out of that pattern. December corn, that was right around that 690 area. We ran the market all the way up to, I think, 17 or 18. And then the past couple days here, we've kind of fell back to the point of breakout. And then on Friday, we reversed out of there and closed back above the $7 area. So technicians are going to be saying that that was a solid breakout of that descending triangle formation, and we're in for some more upside activity as we go down the road. But as I say that, corn is getting harder and harder to sell. End users, world buyers, the buy interest is really light in here. So if the technicals are correct that we're going to go to higher levels, my guess is it's going to have to come from supply shortening rather than demand driven.
Do you agree with him? Demand is starting
to dissipate? I agree with Dan, quite honestly. I've used the analogy all week of there's great demand for Cadillacs at $25,000, but at $70,000 or $80,000, we don't need to produce as many. And that's the same with corn. At $7 to $8 corn, it goes down quite rapidly on what people are willing to pay. Hog feeders out there are they're putting everything they can but corn in their rations that hogs will eat right now in the main big feed mills. So, you know, that's going to be the thing that's going to happen at these prices.
Are you worried about demand destruction at all?
Well, we do know that the Russians are selling wheat at some awful cheap prices. But the other side of the coin is that my two other colleagues basically said that the end user hasn't bought a lot of new crop corn and soybeans because the seed corn companies have developed seed corn that will stand heat and stress and can take this punishment a lot better than they used to. And quite frankly, maybe they took a vacation and didn't go out and examine the fields, the end users. They're all worried about protection and upside this and balance, bottom line balance sheets. But maybe we just forgot to buy some cheap corn in the last 30 to 45 days, Todd.
You're ready to go on sarcastic, aren't you? Giddy up, baby.
Paul doesn't need any spurs, does he?
not today.
Maybe we forgot some of the old basic ideas, Todd.
All right. So here are some of the other numbers we need to look at. Wheat, of course, a high this week, 723, the low at 664 and a quarter. Settlement price there at $6.79, up 6.5 cents. July at 784. 4.75. It was up 11.75 from the bean pit. The nearby August to 13.77.5. Top bottom at 13.16 on the week. The trade down 22.75 for the August contract at $13.31.5. November beans at 13.36. We're down 21.25 cents. Beans tend to be an August crop. Do you think that's still potential out there for that bean market?
Yeah, I think a rain can still help the soybean market, particularly in the first week of August. If this was the second or third week in August, you know, it stabilizes a deal. But I think a rainfall on the bean crop is a positive, and we do know from past experience that the heat doesn't bother the beans quite as much. The problem with the beans, though, is definitely there was a lot of double crop beans that didn't get planted at the right time. And there's other factors in the beans, like the Chinese are doing a wonderful job of not delaying shipment and not buying beans like they should.
It looks to me like most of the pre-report estimates are suggesting we're going to run from 3.2 billion bushel total crop to 3.1, that's a 100 million bushel drop or something like that. But that's a lot bigger drop in the bean market than what you would see at 100 million bushels off of the corn. Is that a pretty good size drop to you?
Well, it's a good size drop, Todd. But I think that along the way, you know, what Paul is saying is that we have the potential maybe to not drop that if we have good weather the rest of August. But we're seeing a lot of the Group 2 beans that are already, they're quit flowering. They probably aren't going to pod. We need rains just to fill those pods out there right now. We walked a field this week, and we only saw 35 pods on a lot of these, and you generally figure a bushel per pod. So we're thinking some 35 and 40 bushel beans in this Group 2 out there right now.
Dan, $14 still hanging out there waiting to be broken.
Well, I wouldn't rule it out from a chart base. We still hang in this 13.50, give or take 50 cents. Beans did find pretty good support down there around that 13.20, and my guess is the way the market performed on Friday, we're going to climb back above 1350 start of next week, and then we're going to basically wait around for USDA. I think everybody's kind of been talking about yields. The other part of this equation is some downward adjustment in harvested acres. Whether or not that all shows up on the August report, we'll have to wait till September, October. But I think there's some downward adjustment in harvested acres to come at us yet.
Just a minute left. Everybody tell me what you think the number from USDA, maybe not your number, what you think USDA will come out with on Thursday.
I think that's probably the most difficult question you could probably come up with the way USDA's reports have been. My guess is even though I don't necessarily agree with Infomagnomics numbers, they try to duplicate USDA's methodology more so than any other crop production consulting company goes. And I would say that they may be, USDA may be closer to their numbers than the other ones.
158 and 13.4.
I'd have to agree with Dan that I think that that's the intention of everybody out there is to think that. I think that it would be discounted if they come in at that, and I think they will be a little bit lower.
When we come back, we'll talk with Murray Wise and Murray Wise Associates.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. While this week started out with more hot and humid weather, temperatures were not as high as during the peak of the heat wave 10 days ago. Rain was also limited this week, with northern Illinois the only part of the state to see rain until Thursday night and Friday. Temperatures the first half of the week ranged from 8 degrees above normal in the east to 10 degrees above normal in far western Illinois. Cooler and less humid air began filtering into Illinois on Wednesday, and on Thursday all but far southern Illinois enjoyed some fairly normal summer weather. While temperatures still approached 90 degrees in much of Illinois on Thursday, dew points were generally in the low 60s compared to the mid-70s earlier in the week. July rainfall in Illinois was much above normal in far northern Illinois and parts of southern Illinois, but much below normal in the remainder of the state. Some much-needed rainfall began spreading into Illinois late this week, and it looks like chances for rain will continue into next week. A cold front should move through Illinois on Sunday, accompanied by a chance for showers and thunderstorms. Another disturbance on Tuesday should bring a good chance for storms, followed by a couple of days of dry weather. Temperatures next week will be at or possibly even below normal for this time in August. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the August 5 edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio include Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. Our studio guest today is Murray Wise from right here in Champaign, Illinois. He's with Murray Wise Associates, specializes in the land prices and auctions. Murray, let's start out with this question. On the fourth day of the week this week, or fourth day of the week and fourth day of the month as well, the USDA Department of Agriculture released its average farmland price. And it says in the state of Illinois, it's $5,800 for 2011. That's an 18% increase over 2010, which was $4,900. And I know people are thinking, hey, that sounds really low, but it's a statewide average. Is that statewide average too low or too high?
I think the statewide average, Todd, is very accurate, quite frankly. Again, there's a lot of low-priced land in southern Illinois. There's certainly nothing in east-central Illinois east-central Illinois or west-central Indiana that's in that price range.
Well, let me go back a little bit further for you. So also, by comparison, this time frame compared to the late 70s and early 80s has one similarity where capitalization is under the price of farmland in the top in 81 when things were as bad as they could possibly get, relatively speaking, for warning signs. The price of land was, roughly speaking, $1,000 over the capitalization price. Today it's $200 over the capitalization price. Do we need to worry at all?
I don't think so, Todd, on the basis that on a percentage basis those numbers are very, very close compared to what they were in the early 80s. But along with that, there's a lot of dramatic conditions that are different. First and foremost, interest rates are totally completely different today versus the early 80s.
Well, Murray, it's great to have you here in the studio. You've been a real big help to WILL and been on the annual March Outlook meeting and the Covington at the Beef House. And it's a pleasure to see you and talk to you again. The question I have here is we know that the farmer's buying, but and you were very big at getting institutional buyers to come into the land market. What's the trend? Who's buying? And who else is going to come in on the game?
Thank you, Paul. That's a really interesting question on the basis that it's not many years ago, in 6-7 years ago, the investor was well over 50% of the marketplace, when in fact the farmer dominates the marketplace today at somewhere between 60 to 75, maybe as high as 80% of the transactions are in fact farmer purchases. And those are purchases, Paul, that are not going to come back to the marketplace in 3 years, 5 years, and maybe probably 10 years. I think it's interesting to look at many counties here in Illinois relevant to the percent of land that change hands. We look at four counties annually, and it's either McLean or Champaign counties, the highest this past year, a 1% turnover rate. Moultrie County was the lowest we checked at 0.3% of the land turns over. Well, that should suggest to one that by normal death in estates, there should be a lot more land than that change hands. And that's one of the driving forces, in my opinion, as to the extremely strong prices we have today.
Murray, as we look at this, you said that wasn't indicative of the Central Illinois, Central Indiana land prices. What are the land prices going now, or what would you expect to pay if we were a farmer wanting to add land in the Central Illinois, Indiana area?
Wayne, there are prices, there are numbers on both sides of this, but again, 8,000 is a pretty common number today. We've seen, obviously, many transactions over 10 and transactions over 12, quite frankly. So it's somewhere in that range today, depending upon quality, location, and local demand.
My question is the demographics were a whole lot different. As you mentioned, the interest rate environment was different than the 70s. The 70s, it was the baby boomers coming out of college wanting to get into farming with their dad, and we had a big drive, big push there, where now farm sizes have, I don't even know, at least 4 or 5 times, I think, what it is than what they were in the 70s. How is that going to impact farmer ownership, I guess, of land? And is land going to basically go into ownership, not necessarily from the farmer, but for more outside investment?
There's a tremendous amount of interest today with outside capital wanting to enter U.S. agriculture. I would estimate, and there's a wide range, but I would estimate, Dan, there's somewhere between $5 and $10 billion worth of capital looking for an opportunity of entering U.S. agriculture today. By the same token, they're in many cases almost locked out of the market because the farmer is simply willing to pay more, and that results in a tremendous floor, a tremendous base under this Illinois-Indiana land market today. And with that, I just simply don't see a lot of change. And there's so many differences between today versus the early and mid '80s. Number one, you know, the farming community had a 22 to 24, somewhere in there, percent leverage back in that era. Today it's under 10% leverage. From our land auction company point of view, we used to have a line item on our standard contract that said, who will you be financing with? We've removed that line item because, you know, 70 to sometimes as high as 90% on an annual basis of our transactions involve no indebtedness at all. It's simply write a check and proceed on down the road.
Are you okay with land prices as high as they are at this point? And then if you are, how do you put that in perspective with the world economy, which I'm not sure that you're okay with?
Great question and two different answers, Todd. First and foremost, I'm not okay with the land prices of today because I'm a buyer and I'd like to own more of it. That's the first problem. But I think they're here to stay, quite frankly, and one simply has to pay up. Yes, I'm very, very concerned about the global economy. But I think the thing that we don't spend a lot of time talking about is the food demand coming out of Southeast Asia. And with another hat on, I have an opportunity to go to Asia twice a year, relevant to almond marketing. And if you look at the Chinese people are saving 38% of their income, and no, their income are not Illinois wage rates. But to think of an economy putting 38% of their income into the bank is just unheard of. And yes, there's a lot of things globally that I'm uncomfortable with, but I think food demand, particularly in India, China, is just almost unsustainable.
Can I ask one follow-up then? Are you satisfied that should the global economy tank, that demand would remain and keep the price of farmland and the value of commodities high?
Well, I think what's happening before our eyes, Todd, is it's not many years ago we used to think about a potential 4-5% return on Midwestern agriculture, and that return has declined, and we're probably today at somewhere between 3.5% and 4%. But when you look at a country like Germany, it's less than 1%. And many of the areas of Germany, they look at a capitalization rate of 0.5%. But the parallel to that also is there's many elderly farmers buying today because they're, quite frankly, tired of the 0.2-0.4% interest rate that they're receiving on their very substantial money market account at the local bank. So to buy a farm, lease it to their neighbor, their cousin, somebody they know, who's going to give them even a 2.5-3% return, looks like an absolute great investment today. And yes, the global economy can cause us some difficulties, but I think that most buyers today look at U.S. farmland as a safe haven.
Murray, what's the minimum acreage that the average institutional buyer is interested in?
Well, first and foremost, Paul, the larger the better. They've got down, I know a few who have bought some quarters, half sections. Really, they want more than a half section, ideally. And if you have 1,000 acres, they'll be a lot happier with you than they will with something smaller than that. I recently was talking to one of the institutional buyers where I knew where there's a couple really good 80s, and they just frowned and looked at me like I was from outer space, and that wasn't something they would consider at all.
One question that I've always had since I've been in the commodity market for over 35 years is, how high is high when it comes to corn and soybeans? And since you've been in the land business for that many years, how high is high here over the next 10 years on land?
Well, I think over the past 36 years, Dan, in my situation, we've always thought it was high, quite frankly, okay? But, look back, and when really good Illinois land was $4,000 an acre, the rents were $160 to $200 an acre. Today, they're $10,000 an acre, let's say, on average, and most counties probably don't average quite that, but at $10,000 and you've got, $350 to $425 rents, probably higher numbers looking at 2012, it's a very similar set of circumstances, quite frankly, Dan.
Thank you so much for your time today, Murray.
Nice to be with you, Todd.
Murray Wise of Murray Wise Associates from right here in Champaign, Illinois. Now a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Dan Zwicker.
I think the markets are still in some pretty good shapes to go higher, but as I mentioned earlier in the program, you got to be careful on demand. This outside market activity is just totally out of control, so it's going to be a real hard market to kind of hang on to.
Wayne Nelson?
We're going to be watching the weather over the weekend very closely, and if we can get some rains and we can get the market to drive down a little bit, we're probably going to be purchasing some calls.
And Paul Cooley?
I think the big factor here is the world stock market, and we have to watch it very carefully.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois. Thank you so much for listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of willag.org. You can find us online there at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.